Hi, everybody, and this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And we're going to continue today with our discussion about possession. Possession, our lesson about possession, because that's what we do here on WBAI of The Positive Mind. We take things that I would normally present in a classroom to students of psychology and teach it to you instead, because you become your own psychologists. And today we're talking about this phenomenon called possession. Have you ever felt possessed? I remember a guy named James Gould Cousins wrote a book which was called By Love Possessed, and it was a bestseller, and it's like this cool concept of being possessed. You can be possessed by the devil. You can be possessed by an addiction. You know, did you ever get a shopping possession? Now, when I say possession, I mean an alter personality practically takes over. And even though you may not be the one who is, you know, you feel like you're there, but you're not there. The day after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday. It's called Black Friday because it's the day that all of the shops have their special sales. And after Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving is a crazy shopping time. And people go after their sales, you know, like stores will be selling things at half prices and stuff like that. When you get into a store where you're competing for a dress or a skirt, like a Donna Karan when they have their special sales, you can find yourself almost like a hunting animal grabbing at the pieces, and you can't believe this is you. Get away from that skirt. That's mine. And it becomes pretty savage. People hunting and down for toys. I've seen this over at the toy shops at Toys R Us. People could be Neanderthals in the way that they go after things. What happens? Is greed kind of do a possession? Do you have, if you have greed present, or if you have competition present? Or does it, as Roberta was saying yesterday, do we trigger hormones? And the hormones dictate that you are taken over by something? Today we're talking about possession of the human mind. In every form, including by the demonic. You could be possessed shopping. You could be possessed dancing. Did you ever get, especially, you know, New Year's Eve or big dancing, and people are whipping it up? Now, a lot of people take drugs, Special K, ecstasy, grass, heroin, you know, whatever they do, and they dance like crazy so that they could accentuate this kind of removal of self into the group self of the dance. And you're dancing, and you're dancing off the planet. You know, add a lot of alcohol to that, and boom, you suddenly there's none of you left. And all that's left is the spirit of the dance. And that's considered an ideal. A couple of weeks ago, we did a program on why it's not such a good idea to leave your mind so often, you know, and go off and dancing without your mind, because we need the mind to be exercised, so that it doesn't have to be exorcised, which we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about exorcisms. I've been present at a couple. Then there is possession by love. You know, what about, does he possess you? Does she possess you? Do you ever feel owned by someone, or did you ever feel like you owned someone? Now, you're going to say no, but if you listen to the average mother talk about their offspring, they say, my child, my daughter, my son, because you're my child. That's why. Hey, why are you giving all your money away to this kid? Because she's my daughter. But the word my is a big word. It is your possession. And parents very often feel like they possess the beings that are their offspring. So if you get married to someone else, your mother may not like it because my son has married some other person. She'll never be his. And in fact, one of the things that happened to children in early infancy, in early childhood, is parents will frequently hypnotize children into believing that they are possessed by the parent. So a parent will, without meaning to do this, will take a child and rock the child in their arms, and maybe even while breastfeeding a child, what could be better than that? Being rocked and breastfed, right, laying around, life is good. And then all of a sudden, they'll say things to you like, you're my baby. No one will ever love you the way I do. I'll be yours forever. You're mine. And they hypnotize. They put out these words that wind up driving deep into your mind. And you don't know why you can't find a relationship that's satisfactory. Frequently, I've had to hypnotize people to unearth these messages that have been driven in there. Because you hear them, you see them. As a psychotherapist, I frequently hear people criticizing themselves by saying to themselves, I'm no good, so on and so forth, and you find the person behind that message is some hypnotic suggestion by a parent or a sibling. But that's what psychotherapy is. Psychotherapy, ideally, is unearthing the real self. You can be possessed by an illness. As I talked about yesterday, boy, if you get the flu, right, a flu or a cold, and you watch that take you over, it possesses you. Possesses you. You know how you do an exorcism of a flu or a cold? Chicken soup. Yes, chicken soup makes it feel like an exorcism. Some reason or other, this combination of you get the right soup and suddenly you feel better. How does that happen? What is that all about? You could be possessed by a group mind or a cult. You get an organization of people together and they get together and they're all humming and chanting the same thing. Kumbaya, I love you. Plus, let's make sure all those people who wear red and are evil, we could do away with. You could be possessed by an emotion. You could be possessed by rage, jealousy, fear, where your entire being is all about jealousy, is all about rage, is all about fear. So we're going to talk about these possessions today, and we're going to try to help you understand them and try to see if in your own mind you feel possessed. In fact, if you do feel possessed in some way or feel like you've been possessed, give us a call here. We'll be taking your calls a little later. It's kind of useful to make a distinction between possession, in which the victim remains aware of what is happening while it's happening, and possession, in which the victim has no subsequent memory or event of what's happening. So there are possessions where the person's aware of what's happening, and sometimes volunteers to let it happen. Because part of the beauty of being possessed is you give yourself up. And if you enjoy, you know, if you're not enjoying yourself so much, you give yourself up to something else. You let yourself be possessed. The ones that are unconscious, the ones that are conscious, are called co-conscious. Co-conscious is the word that goes with it. Co-conscious possessions. And the other one is called amnesic possessions. Or the ones that you're aware of are called lucid possessions. Lucid means you're aware of it. And the other is called somnambulistic, as in you're asleep to it, and sleepwalking. We're going to talk about spiritual, but you know, I'll tell you something before we get there. Belief in the possibility of demonic possession has faltered since the advent of sophisticated medical knowledge. What was previously considered to be examples of control of an individual by a spirit or devil is now commonly accepted in the numerous forms of mental illness. Now, this doesn't mean that possession doesn't exist, because even in the new DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, they have left room for demonic possession. It's also culture-bound. There are certain cultures that absolutely believe in a demonic possession, and it's part of the culture. It's an accepted part of the culture, culture. And there are other cultures that reject it completely. So if a person has a demonic possession and they're from, it could be IT, or it could be from, you know, somewhere in the Middle East, and you know, it's very often part of the entire group. A possessed individual is usually characterized by having strange physical ailments or disfigurements. If you think about somebody who's possessed, they have verbal outbursts. You know, when you think about somebody who's possessed, you know, even they have likely obscene or sacrilegious in nature. They're usually very sacrilegious. They have violent behavior or vulgar behavior. The ones who are possessed, when you see somebody truly possessed and you think, oh, there's some kind of entity in their body, they're going to have body spasms and contortions like epilepsy, you know. A person could be going through a spasm or something like that, and you look at them, nope, that person's possessed at the moment. They can have the ability to speak languages never before spoken. We see that, and we call that possession. They could have they could have superhuman abilities such as psychic abilities. They could see into the future or know things about you that nobody knows. They could have abnormal strength, unusually powerful like a superhero, because they're possessed by a superhero or the devil. And they could possibly do levitation, cessation of normal body functions for a period of time, including breathing and heartbeat, and a pronounced revulsion to symbols, places, people, objects, and ceremonies having any religious content, an aversion to the crucifix. Do you know what I mean? So now, how do we say this is not possession? Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind, a class in psychology talking about possession syndrome. How do you say, well, wait a minute, if somebody's got all these weird things going on, how do we now explain these things? Well, it's kind of easier to explain, even though it's hard to explain to you. You know, schizophrenia itself is characterized by the presence of delusions and hallucinations, disorganized speech, sometimes speaking in a language that's made up, disorganized or catatonic behavior, a flat affect, inappropriate emotional responses. So these general, you know, if a person has become psychotic, they can also become highly delusional. The delusions can be one of a thought insertion, you know, thought broadcasting, delusions of guilt, delusions of grandeur such as being God or being the devil. Now, I have known people who have said they are Satan and they were ABM, all but medication. So being God or believing you're Jesus, or believing you're the mother of Jesus. There's a wonderful book called The Three Christs of Ypsilanti Prison. It was Ypsilanti Prison. It was a prison and a psychiatric floor. There was a psychiatrist who worked with three people who all thought they were Jesus Christ. And so he decided to have a group with them. And there they were and had this group. And what became of it was amazing, because in their schizophrenia, they had to adjust. How could I be Christ and you be Christ? One of us is going to be Christ and somebody's not going to be Christ. Believe it or not, they split up and became the Trinity. You know? All right, you're the Holy Ghost. You know? Psychosis is often thought of as a break with reality. And society will think of people who have been possessed or delusional is not in touch with reality. So kind of the idea is that there is a reality and a break with reality. Now, family members and friends caring for possessed individuals can become extremely disturbed by the state in which the individuals present themselves and often request an exorcism as a last resort. Now, what's happened? This in psychiatry is called a folie à deux. A folie à deux is when it's a folly of two people. And what happens is one person is crazily believing they're possessed, and the other person begins to believe they are possessed. So the two of them are kind of collaborating in this belief system, And so they call it an exorcism. And I'm not saying that exorcism is absolutely wrong. I'm not sure. I remember one case where I was working with multiple personality disorder, which is one of the common forms that frequently see possession syndrome. Back in the early 80s, I was working with a man named Ralph Allison, who I hope to have on the radio soon, and he was a specialist in dealing with multiple personality disorder. I was working with him, and we found that this was frequently there, that within every personality of a multiple personality, you would find a possession by some spirit entity, and we would wind up talking to that spirit entity. It was part of the treatment. And part of the healing, whatever that is. I mean, I could talk to you about that at length someday. The paranoid thinking present in many instances of psychosis is similar to that of an individual who's possessed. And there's another one, you know, there's a superhuman strength. Now, how do you explain the superhuman strength that many people who are possessed have? And superhuman strength very often goes along with the manic episode of a manic depressive or cyclothymic reaction. Because in your mania, your entire body and all your muscles are focused on one sense of power being. Just like if you took steroids. You know, if you took steroids, it would be like an extra push to your will. So superhuman strength is not automatically a sign of demonic possession. It may be a sign of a manic depressive illness. So all of these are different ways that it has been seen, but I want to talk a little bit about the way it's seen in religion. Well, let me include one other thing. Tourette syndrome. Tourette syndrome is all thought to lie in either the dopaminergic system or the adrenergic system. It's a kind of a neurological thing. The disorder results from a supersensitivity in the dopamine receptors and a hyperactivity in the norepinephrine system. And Tourette syndrome, you must be familiar with it. Somebody who is thrashing about and flailing, shouting obscenities, sexually aggressive phrases, violent threats, and sacrilegious statements. Now, you see a person in the middle of a Tourette syndrome attack, and you very often say, that person is possessed by the devil. I've seen a couple in my life, and it looks like this person is completely possessed because they're totally outrageous. Totally outrageous during that time. And you can see why people would have thought of this. In fact, the witches of Salem, you know the witches of Salem, the whole idea of those witch trials that took place, it seemed to be based on the fact, it's quite an interesting story, based on yeast. It was based on bread. There was a bread and there was a mold in the bread, and this mold in the bread was psychogenic. And it actually was like an LSD experience that many people in the village had. And they were all eating this kind of LSD bread. And this really happened in Salem. So they became totally delusional. And they believed, they started off with a thought of, I see the devil. And then somebody else thought, I am the devil. And then they said, I see the devil. And, you know, many people were killed and burned at the stake by this hallucinating village. You can look it up. Go on the internet. Take a look at it. The story gets really interesting. You know, in the Catholic Church, I was brought up in the Catholic Church, they have a ritual, which I've been able to get, which is the ritual of how to do an exorcism of someone who was possessed by the devil. Now, you must understand, in Catholicism, the gospel, which is a sign of the presence of Christ, is an absolute belief in possession by the devil. So we're not saying that it's not possible. We're saying, oh, yes, this happens. the Catholics will say this happens. And if we have possession, then we have exorcism as one of our tools. Cardinal Medina, back in the 90s, back in the last century, he said that, he restated the rules for exorcism. And there were, rules that were put out, how you do it. A priest, one who is expressly and particularly authorized when he intends to perform an exorcism over persons tormented by the devil, must be properly distinguished for his piety, prudence, and integrity of life. So he's got to be kind of a saint. There has to be no question about his moral qualities. Right? And then in order to exercise this ministry rightly, he should resort to, let me see if I could find you the exact process of it. Here it is. If you are possessed by the devil, you must, if you want to become clear of the possession of the devil, you must, number one, according to the Catholic Church, you must reject any and all types of unnatural insights, whether they occur in a dream or in a waking state, and these include Ouija boards, seances, palm reading, fortune-telling, potions, incantations, martial arts, right? Dungeons and Dragons, Harry Potter books are specifically stated, Eastern mysticism and tarot cards. When one begins honestly trying to live the Christian life, one must break with all satanic influences, and many of these are in the form of games. Games that children play, combatant games. And now here's a quote coming from the church. Many people never know that the games they were involved with as children are mortal sins and will send them to hell without proper repentance. So if you want to reject the devil and get the devil out of your body, according to the Catholic Church, you must avoid other conditions and associations that breed satanic influence. You must dissociate from drugs, alcohol, tobacco, illicit sex, pornography. You must terminate association with any of the following organizations immediately. Freemasons, which is surprising, that's every politician I know is a Freemason. The Illuminati, you must not be a part of that, because that questions the Catholic Church. B'nai B'rith, you can't be a part of that. Cecil Rhodes Scholars, Satanism, Wicca, which is the Eastern Star, the Shriners, and so on and so forth. And they give you an entire list about what you're supposed to not be a part of. And then once you get that, we go into the cleansing, which is a process that starts with everything that you do, including the Bible and what you read and how you read it and what your attitude is and how you reject it. Now, I am not saying that this is fanatical. All secret societies must be rejected. Mormons, you have to reject. Jehovah's Witnesses get rejected. Not all Catholics do it this way. But the religious Catholics, the ones who are really strongly held to the Catholic Church and follow the traditional mode, they will really, in their church, they believe this. And they believe that an exorcism may be the only way to rid somebody of the devil. And the devil is there and present. Did you ever think there was a devil present in your life? You know, did you ever think there was a devil in your life? Did you ever think that there was somebody who was just basically possessed by evil? Well, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, talking about possession, and we're talking about being possessed by something or somewhat. And like I said, it could be a psychiatric disturbance. It could be just, you know, and sometimes people want to be possessed. Don't they? We're going to take one of your calls. Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I don't mean to be disrespectful to any religious person and their belief system. It's just when I read the rules for exorcism and I see them, I also want to report that I know that they work frequently. Now, let me give you just an example of this. I was working as a therapist with somebody who had multiple personality disorder, And I was told by one of the spirits forms, and the way we would get access, and the way that most shrinks get access to the personalities of the multiple personalities through a form of hypnosis. There's a way that you hypnotize somebody, and when you hypnotize somebody, they go into what's called a fugue state, and in that fugue state, one or another personality will come present. Now, it's a kind of a dangerous thing to do because you've got to know what you're doing, because sometimes you could unearth somebody or unleash somebody, and you can't get rid of them. So, you know, you could be calling up a personality. And it all started when I was a therapist one day and a woman came in and said to me, there's somebody inside me who's trying to kill me. I, being a gestalt therapist at the time, said, well, I'd like to talk to that person who's trying to kill you. That's all I said. And all of a sudden, a totally different looking person stands up and said, okay, Buster, what do you want? From this meek, humble person who walked in. And I thought, boy, this person knows Gestalt therapy and role play really well. But I soon learned that this person was a totally different person than the person sitting there. And over the time that I worked with this personality, a number of different persons evolved, including a boy named Bobby who had never spoken to anyone, who lived in the bottom of a closet, including a helper personality, who was somebody who played concert piano, concert-level piano, when none of the other people played piano. She also spoke Chinese. You know, how did she ever get that? The multiple personalities also had different immune systems. One of them had an immune system and was immune to certain illnesses, and the other one was not. So she got, during her time with me, she actually got chickenpox. Even though she had it as a child. The different personalities, there were four different women. They all had different menstrual cycles. And this was interesting. Each one came up with a different part of a menstrual cycle. So she had four menstrual cycles, meaning that she was bleeding all the time. Meaning, how did that happen? Some theory about multiple personality says that some children are born to be twins or quadruplets, and instead they come out as one person, and that this may be the basis of multiplicity. In my experience with multiplicity, what I've always seen is whoever is a multiple has been abused as a child. Strong abuse, you know, you're being beaten, things are being done to you, sometimes sexual in nature, your poor mind doesn't know what to do, it dissociates, it leaves, and it becomes somebody else. Well, in this one person I was working with, she had what was called the inner self-helper. And the inner self-helper was a spiritual force. And I would speak to that spiritual force. I would call on it. And I would say, would you help me? You know, help me with this situation, because usually there's one person trying to kill the main character. And she would tell me what to do. She'd say, well, you've got to get Bobby to come out of the closet. And here I was doing therapy with a 4-year-old boy who's in the bottom of a closet. You know, at other times I'd be doing therapy with a woman who wanted to kill everybody. At other times, it was all in the same person. It was group therapy, you know what I mean? With one person. But the inner self-helper, when she came out, when she manifested, it was kind of amazing because she would know things that nobody else knew. So this looks like possession, you know, but I don't know how it happened. But she told me how to create the healing. And I did something that was tantamount to an exorcism. And it worked. It worked. First I opened windows. First, I just followed the rules as I was told completely. Now maybe it worked because the person was ready to be healed. And they gave me information on how to heal them. But it looked just like an exorcism. I tell you, things in the room shook. You know, there were all kinds of clouds everywhere, and I was trembling in my boots. There's a book you might be interested in by my supervisor and friend Ralph Allison called Minds in Many Pieces. You could find it on the internet. We're going to take a short break, give you a little music. When we come back, we'll take your calls. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Music from Café de Luna, which I thought was appropriate. Here we are, WBAI 99.5 FM. And we're taking your calls. 212-209-2900. If you just tuned in, we've been talking about possession, being possessed one form or another. Possessed by any number of things. And you could feel it. So there's two forms. One is a conscious possession where you feel like you're, you know, like an addiction where you can't control yourself. And the other one is this unconscious possession where you're barely there and something runs your life. And it's part of my profession. Part of what I do is help people become unpossessed because wouldn't it be nice to drive your own car? 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Armand. How
good
you doing?
Afternoon. I'm good.
My name is Andre, and I got to share an experience with you I had a couple
Please.
Of years back. I was working for a fellow. I was driving. He was a CEO of a company. And I was driving him around, but to make a long story short, when I got done with my routine, daily routine, I'd go home, I'd take the bus. And on the bus, I encountered a man that wanted to sell me some gold bracelets. And they, I don't know why he, you know, why he was pushing them on me. But anyway, I didn't want to buy them. But he insisted that I at least look at one, so I did. And you know, regular gold bracelets. Nothing fancy about them. When I go home, I had my daughter was then about six to 7 months old, And I went to pick her up, and she started crying. You know, automatically. It was a very weird experience for me. It was almost as if something. I can't explain it because the experience. And I've never been a believer in the spiritual or demons or anything like this. But it was a very odd experience because my daughter, she was fine, and all of a sudden she started crying, and I was trying to soothe her, and as I was doing that, all the hairs on my hand, on my right hand, were standing on end. It was very odd. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep the whole night because I was with my wife. My wife said that she's had these experiences before, she was with one of her roommates, she said, a long time ago. And she was dreaming. She was sleeping. But her roommate went to, talk to her, and she didn't realize she was sleeping. And my wife said that there was some kind of a being in the room with her that she was aware of, and that whatever it was threw her friend against the wall. Now, I mean, I wasn't there.
Is your wife from South America?
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I thought so. What part?
She's from Colombia.
She's from Colombia.
Yes.
So that's a common belief in Colombia. You see, in Colombia, it is common that something enters you for a little bit, enters your body, and could take over, and it's part of the Catholicism of Colombia. So
right.
It's like what I'm saying is, somehow you could have the mental set for it. And it could happen. Now, let's talk about your experience. Did you get the bracelet or did you not get the bracelet, the gold bracelet?
I mean, I held it in my hand. I held
okay,
it.
Okay, and
I gave
then
it.
And then your child had a reaction to seeing you, and somehow that day, like you said, you were coming home from work. It's either you were very tense, plus you had an allergic reaction, plus when you brought that to your child picked up on this. And whatever the field was around your child created this reaction, or you were in what Roberta Atti called just an hour ago the morphogenic field of something very strange.
It was very odd. I like I said, Armand, I've never been a believer in these things until that day that this very odd experience happened to me. Like all the hairs on my hand were standing on end, and I felt a very heavy atmosphere in the room, and I couldn't explain it.
I know, and naturally, by nature of my profession, we tend to debunk this, Andre, except I can't tell you, because of my profession, the number of things that have walked in my room to talk to me that have put the hairs on edge, eat with me, So I've seen things. I've been a part of things that I would say go way outside of the world of just my field.
Right.
So, I hear it. And let me just ask you, as a result of this and the connection with your wife and talking to your wife, is it possible, would you say, that there was any after effect of this incident? Would you say that your relationship with your wife became better, or do you think it triggered something becoming worse, or it stayed the same?
I don't know. I really can't say that it's been normal, I mean, there hasn't been any better
back
or any worse.
Uh-huh.
She's been very connected. She's a very sensible woman. Touchy-feely, you know what I mean?
Sure.
She's very touchy-feely.
Sensitive, loving, kind of person.
Right. And she's,
very open, and you tend to be a little more intellectual, and you tend to think that she may be a little too sensitive at times, and so you give her your structure, which she needs desperately, and she gives you her passion, which you need desperately. It sounds like a good pair. How does it sound?
Right, it sounds real good.
Yeah, and I don't even sell bracelets. Thanks for calling in, Andre.
All right, Armand. Take care. Have a good day.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Armand? Great
good.
Job. Fantastic subject. You know, I was reading somewhere that Nostradamus predicted that the Antichrist appears in history, identifying Hitler, Napoleon. And, you know, it's kind of ironic that this country could also produce an Antichrist that
uh-huh.
would lead the world into a big inflagration, some kind of a armed global war that would end life as we know it. So I think that, you know, if we look at what's going on now, and I know you know about Ivanwald and these very secret places on the Potomac where these groups meet these global people to perpetuate war and suffering and torture all around the world for their own belief in whatever this demonic spirit that has possessed them. So I
and,
think...
And they, working on that belief, you know, you've got to consider whether it's real or not real. The energy of working on it, as Roberta says, creates a field. And in this field, it has an effect on people.
Yeah.
You know, just as people who are like the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
You know, they have a belief that there's evil outside of their white sheets.
Yeah.
And so it kind of creates a field of unrest everywhere
yeah.
around it.
Yeah.
What's your name, by the way, and thanks for calling in.
My name is Mike.
Mike, I appreciate your calling in. Thank
okay,
you so
thank
much.
You.
Right. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. There's so much that people don't talk about that they feel and think. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Armand. This is Insara Ra.
Hi, how are you? It's been weeks.
Actually, well, more than that now, but yeah, I'm pretty good, except I've got a hernia. But other than that, to paraphrase a quote from Shakespeare a little bit, I remember reading that, said, the universe is not just more fantastic in the internal and external human universe is not just more fantastic than we imagine, but it's more fantastic than we can imagine. This great program that you've got. The thing that happened with me, which was a sort of, I guess, a normal, strange thing that happened, I was meditating. This was when I was quite young, probably, I guess, in my 20s. And I had been meditating, learning how to do what I guess you'd call out-of-the-body you know, experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I remember I was doing it, but I was very, very tired. I'd been working very hard at my job, and so I was kind of exhausted. And one day I decided to, you know, do this sort of meditation experience. And what I remember was that I levitated my being outside of my body. I was like sort of a couple of inches above it, and I think I had done this before. I'd been trying to do it before, and what I saw was that there seemed to be another entity out there. It was kind of greenish. It was small. It was observing me, somehow, I guess, unaware that I could now see it, just kind of looking down at me. And I guess as soon as I saw that, I lost it. I mean, I just freaked, and I just kind of dropped back into my body because I was, like, scared, like, what the heck is going on here? But I do remember this experience quite clearly, and then, of course, I wondered later, are there, you know, other dimensions or whatever that probably we're unaware of and that I happened to see for these couple of seconds?
Yeah, in a book by Isaac Bentov, Itzhak Bentov, called Stalking the Wild Pendulum.
Yes, I know. I know. I've read it, yes.
Mm-hmm. You've read it. You know, he talks about what you could do in these spaces, on these when you can allow your mind to stretch out to a world. And he in effect, says you could be in two places at the same time, you know. And what we're talking about is that when you can access your mind and use it, you could travel, even if it's in the world of imagination, you could travel to places where you're capable of seeing and feeling and knowing things that you're not able to know.
Altered states, yes.
Yeah. Like New Jersey is an altered state.
But I guess we're scared of them. I mean, I had one more where I actually had a nervous breakdown because, to make it very short, I seemed to believe that there was another entity inside of me, and I couldn't communicate it to anybody. It was like I knew this was going on, or I thought I did, and I just felt like I was in another space that nobody knew I couldn't communicate where I was. What finally got me to a therapist was that I began to think, I said, you know, this is getting very painful, and maybe I need to end this. And that's when I said, I think I better go to a therapist. And luckily, I did find a woman, you know, who talked with me for a while, and it was a good experience. But
I understand. Thank you very much for calling in, Sarara.
Okay, take care.
Nice to talk to you again. You know, and that's one of the things about psychotic episodes, or what they call nervous breakdowns. You're forced in that world. I mean, when your brain decides that it's going to leave town, and it does it, you don't think of yourself as crazy. You believe that you're in a world of reality. You see? So a person coming in who says to me, I'm afraid I may be crazy, is already, I know, not somebody who's psychotic, because usually people who are psychotic or schizophrenic are not aware of their craziness, you know? And it's a distance. Part of the difficulty in getting help to these people is they absolutely believe that the world they're in is real or a possession, you know? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMilhaj. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, is this Armand?
Yes, it is.
How you doing? My name is Sha, calling from the Bronx.
Hello, Sha.
My question is, I'll have a couple of questions, but the first one is, what makes the Catholics such great people when it comes to doing exorcisms, or why do they put themselves above other people or other religions or other ways of life?
Now, I don't think they do necessarily. I mean, yes, they do, sure. You know, thou shalt have no false gods before me. When I was a kid and I was in Catholic school, I remember they used to forbid us. There was a different church one block away. And they said, don't ever go in that church because you'll commit one of these sins that you'll never be forgiven for. And it was this whole thing about keeping loyalty. But it's not just Catholicism. Almost every religion does that. They have scare techniques to keep you in the fold, you know?
Okay. And another thing is, as far as the has there ever been any documented proof that the Catholics were the particular religion or the best religion as far as learning exorcism?
I think in the Catholic Church you'll find that proof, and then I think if you go to certain other Islamic places, you'll find proof about how they can do it in their own kind of way. And I think every religion has proof about its own best way of exorcising demons. But, you know, some people don't believe in the devil, so you got a problem right there.
Okay.
You know, but so, but I hate questions. But let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something, just for a moment, okay, if you don't mind.
Not a problem.
When did you last see your dad?
When did I last see my dad?
Yeah.
When I was about 5 years old.
Yeah. What happened?
What happened? He was deported back to the Dominican Republic.
And you've never been did he die there, or did you go?
No, he's still there. I've spoken to him probably about 2 years ago.
So how come you haven't spent any time visiting him since you've been 5 years old?
Well, because I didn't have the means to get to DR to see him or anything else like that.
And what about his means to get to see you?
Well, he's deported, so he's not allowed back into the country.
Allowed back in. You know, I'm going to tell you something, Shah. I think it's an important journey for you. I think it's an important journey. I think it's a save your pennies and make that trip. That it's, I hear a distress inside you.
Okay.
And I hear this distress that's looking for to kind of close some pieces, you know, to kind of bring some loose ends together.
Okay. I was listening to the program, pretty much the whole program that you've been speaking on.
Yeah.
It's a very good program. Very, very good. One of my favorite subjects. But as for what they were saying, like the list of things and people that you should avoid and things like that. See, all right, you said that you had dealt with multiple personalities. In my studies of becoming who I became and everything, I found out that, you say people call themselves Christ and stuff like that. I call myself God. But the reason why I call myself God is because we are children of God. And if we were made by the Creator, then therefore we are what we were made by. Therefore, your Father's God, you are God. And that's how I believe.
Yes, which is why I directed you to your father. because I think that there's something there that you need to heal. You're right.
Not even believe. That's what I know. Because
what you know,
to believe
absolutely.
Is not to know. So if you have a belief, then
it's
you really
just a
don't
thought
know
to
what
you.
You know. So,
thank you, Sher. Thank you very much. And this is Armand DeMille. I'm sorry. I knew there was even more. We have time for one more caller, and I'd love to get that in here. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Susan. How are you?
Hello, Susan.
I have a question. It's a very interesting show. A few years ago, every time when I would go to sleep, I would feel I wouldn't really be asleep. I'd be awake, and I would try to move my pinky, and I couldn't, right? And then I would always feel like there was something behind me and it was something evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disturbing because I felt like if I can't come out of it, I'm going to die. And then I read up online about this thing called night terrors.
Yes, it sounds like.
And what is that? And why?
Well, you know, nobody knows why. There's some suspicion that there's an activity in the amygdala, which is a little spot in your brain that has this electrical discharge. And when this discharge goes off, it kind of sets you into a frantic kind of almost paranoid, frightened mood. And there's a panic response to this energy going on. It's imagine if you suddenly got an electrical jolt and you didn't know where it came from, how you might react. So there's some suspicion that the night terrors are based in the amygdala and based in a discharge by the amygdala. You might get a sleep study to understand it a little better. Although, from what you've told me, this happened to you once and it's not happening to you now.
No, it was happening for a while, and then I had this huge heart attack, and since then it hasn't happened.
Well, you see, that it sounds like that might have been what it was augmenting. Not augmenting, but it sounds like it might have been saying that we need this discharge for some reason, and the heart attack may have been another way of manifesting that discharge.
Well, why is there always an element, everybody who I read about it, had an element of they felt evil or the devil there?
Well, it's just who you're reading. Some people felt that, and other people felt love.
Oh, you know lucky me, right? I get the devil.
It's who you're picking out, who you're choosing to read.
Thank you so much. You know, more shows like this, I really am enjoying it.
Yes, Susan, as much as I could find, you know, it's having spent as many years as I have in the field of psychology and studying as much as I have, there is so much information. It's what enables me to do a new program every day.
Yes.
With different ideas. And I'm glad to see that you and other people are responsive to
yes.
learning about this more technical stuff, because it's fascinating to me.
Thank you so much, Armand.
It is my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Armand DeMille here with you at The Positive Mind. So we were able to cover this. In a short time, I'm going to get Ralph Allison, who is a specialist in multiple personality disorder, to share with me our information about MPD, MPD multiple personality disorder. It's really fascinating. I mean, it validates everything you ever suspect about psychology. You know, whenever you have been a therapist and you say, well, I'm not sure this really works, when you learn about MPD, you learn about cause and effect and how things manifest. It's amazing. So I'm going to get Ralph on the phone with us, and he'll be in the studio with us, and we'll do a program together. And I will be back with you Tuesday. I'm on with you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 1 o'clock. I'll be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of this terrific information. You can send me an email, armand@brainlink, brainlink.com. Or you could, and you could download the program from the website, thepositivemind.com. Thepositivemind.com. Bye-bye for now, my friends.
On Friday and Saturday, November 18th and 19th, the Institute for Puerto Rican Policy, in cooperation with the Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund, present the first annual Latino Voting Rights Conference. The issues addressed will be the Voting Rights Act, election reform, voter protection, and Latino political power in the United States, and will feature Congressman Jose Serrano, Congresswoman Nidia Velázquez, Herman Badillo, and others. The conference will take place at the Community Service Society at 105 East 22nd Street, 4th floor, New York City. For more information, contact Angelo Falcon at angelo.falcon@verizon.net. That's angelo.falcon@verizon.net, or call 212-739-7516. Again, that's 212-739-7516.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is your girl, Ife. I'm here chilling with my boy, Capital G. What's going on?
Hey, Ma, listen. I just flew in from Brooklyn, and I need to know the information on your hip-hop takeover.
Well, the hip-hop takeover, too, is happening Friday, November 18th, 7 p.m., lasting through November 19th, midnight. So that's 29 hours of pure listener-supported, commercial-free hip-hop on WBAI. So that's the Hip-Hop Takeover 2, November 18th, 7 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Brooklyn, home of the greatest rappers. Big comes first and the cream comes after. Now put your lighters up.
On Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m., the Marcus Garvey Holistic Center presents its monthly International Holistic Health and Organic Expo. This expo will include a marketplace of organic foods and health products, a live cultural show, and from 6 to 11 p.m., presentations by participating health practitioners. The Honorable Marcus Garvey Achievement Award for Community Service will be presented to Dr. Layla Africa and Brother Erwin Clear. You are invited to stay for the after party. All this takes place at the Honorable Marcus Garvey Holistic Center, 5105 Church Avenue, near Utica Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. For further information, call 718-363-8043. That's 718-363-8043.